Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Tommy, we're going to be talking cars today, but we're going to be talking RIP cars. One of the saddest topics in the automotive world, when cars say farewell, when they go to the great junkyard in the sky. And the top 10 cars that died this year, I have right in front of me. So, it's a sad day, but, you know, cars come and they go.
And in a lot of cases, they are replaced by new models. In some cases, they are not replaced by anything new, and they're just gone and slowly fade into the sunsets. But as you mentioned, we are discussing the top 10 cars that died so far in 2021.
But before we get to the RIP cars, RIP, rest in peace, let's talk about some news.
Okay.
It's been kind of a slow news week, actually. Not a lot has happened. The biggest news, of course, of the week was that Stellantis kind of laid out their electrification strategy. Probably for all you Jeepers out there, the most interesting bit of news was that Jeep is going to have an electrified version of every one of their vehicles. Coming up next, the electrified Jeep Grand Cherokee, at least a hybrid.
Yeah, and we have some new mottos for these brands in the Stellantis lineup, and some truly terrible models, I think it's fair to say. These are catchphrases that the new brands are going to be adopting, and they are, well, they're kind of cringy. I have a list of them. Do you want to know what some of them are?
Reading through them, I died inside, but go ahead. I don't know, whoever came up with these should probably have gone back to the blackboard. All right, go for the new Stellantis model lineup. I guess their catchphrases, mottos, whatever the hell they are.
Heating up people, but not the planet.
Heating up people.
What brand do you think that is?
I think that's Alfa Romeo.
I think that one's Fiat.
Oh, is that Fiat? There's no room to eat up people.
How about
Fiat.
This one? Tearing up the streets, not the planet.
Oh, that's got to be Dodge, right?
I think that one's Dodge, yep.
And by the way, Dodge also unveiled their electrification plan. They're going to be building electric muscle cars. I think we knew that was coming.
How about this one?
Yeah.
Green is the new cool.
Green is the new cool.
Yes, that's one of the brands in the Stellantis lineup.
I'm going to go with Peugeot.
I've forgotten already, actually. I think it might be like Opel or something.
Okay, Opel.
How about this one? There's one others that you will know for sure. There's some really bad ones. The Art of Travel Magnified, Turning Sustainable Mobility into Quality Time. That one is Peugeot, I think.
Okay.
Zero Emission Freedom. What do you think that is?
Zero Chrysler?
Jeep.
Oh, God.
Zero Emission Freedom is a new Jeep motto. We've got a long way from the toughest four-letter word on wheels to Zero Emission Freedom.
Oh, my. Oh, my. You know, maybe it's one of those cases of, like, it sounded good in French, but when you translate it to English, it didn't quite.
Zero Emission Freedom. What do you think that translates to?
C'est magnifique. It doesn't work when you're talking it here. Yeah, I think I don't want to look. I think we've raked these guys over the coals enough. I suspect after the publicity that they've gotten off of all these logo motto thingies, they're probably going to come back to the drawing board, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. How about this one from 2024? Alfa becomes Alfa E Romeo. Jeez. All right. That's horrible.
I Romeo?
No, E, as in, like, put an E on anything and it becomes more sustainable, apparently, Dad.
I thought it was I. We're past I now. We moved
on to E. Yeah. Yep, for sure.
The Iulia?
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 No, Iulia. It'd be the Iulia instead of the Julia or the Julie. Yikes.
Stelvio?
Oh, there's going to be smoke coming out of your head if you think about this one too much harder, Dad. So let's move on to our list of the top 10 cars that died so far in 2021.
Before, one more thing I want to news-wise. If you're listening to this audibly, you will know that we are going to the Chicago Auto Show this week. It's come back, our first auto show in like 2 years. If you're watching it on YouTube, the auto show would have just taken place. But anyway, there's a lot going on at the auto show. Ford is rolling out all of their hottest vehicles, the Maverick, the Bronco, and the Lightning. So they'll be there. I think we're going to have wall-to-wall coverage. Me and Andre are going. Only one day this week, this year, for the press days. So it's going to be busy, but me and Andre are going to be giving you as many new vehicle reveals as possible in the time that we have.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting week. I don't know what else is supposed to be debuted. So obviously we know what the Bronco and the Maverick and the Lightning look like. But is there going to be anything debuted, any new vehicles?
I don't know. That's always the thing. You know, we were expecting that to be the Tundra, but the Tundra got already kind of I'm going to say unveiled, but it was more of a train wreck than that. So who knows? Maybe they'll have a Tundra there. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be very cool.
That would be really cool. All right. The top 10 cars that died in 2021 so far. What is number 10, Tommy?
So number 10 is the car behind me if you're watching on YouTube. But if you're not, it's the Volkswagen Golf, specifically the standard Golf. So the Golf has a bunch of generations, currently 8 generations. And in the U.S., we've had 1 through 7. But we are not getting the 8th generation Golf with an exception.
What's the exception?
Well, the 8th gen is coming to the States in GTI and apparently Golf R form only. But if you want a standard, stripped-down, iconic Golf, you can't get one for the 8th generation. Now, in Europe, you can. Like, if you're listening to this in Germany or the UK, you can probably go out and buy an 8th generation Golf right now. It's just a standard model. But here in the United States, if you want the new Golf, you have to get a GTI or a performance model.
So if you want a Golf, you got to get yourself a Taos, a Tiguan, or an Atlas instead.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you read between the lines, I think that the Tiguan has pretty much killed the Golf, because the Golf has always been like an entry-level family car, right? And now that's more of the Taos, because you Americans don't stop buying stupid crossovers. So that's what happened.
You know, I love Volkswagen. It's one of my favorite brands. They built some of the best cars in the world, but I am completely befuddled by their North American car strategy. You know, I think what is happening is that all the decisions about what cars to bring to America are taking place in Wolfsburg, you know, like the headquarters, and they don't take a lot of input from the folks here. Because look, Volkswagen should be ruling America. They were the first like non-American brand to really put down roots, right, with the Beetle way back in the day, long before the Japanese, long before the Koreans. And yet they're struggling, you know, selling many cars here. And I remember I was at Geneva and I was having a long conversation with like the fifth or five CEOs ago of the Volkswagen North America dude. And I said, you guys need to bring the Amarok over, like ASAP, right?
Yep. Which is their truck. It's a pickup truck.
Yeah, you will sell the, you know, off of it. And he was like, no, chicken tax, you know, can't do it, too expensive. Instead, two cars they brought over that absolutely did not sell, the CC, don't get that at all, and the Arteon, right? These are cars that completely don't work, or maybe they do work in America, but nobody really wants them for the most part. They're such small niche players. And it's just, you know, confounding. The other one that they would have sold, and they were first, once again, right? They have the van, the California. Nathan and Andre got to drive it around California. A beautiful four-wheel drive adventure van. That would probably sell in the hundreds of thousands, even at a very high price point right now, because, you know, those things are red hot, right? We just took the Mercedes 4x4 storyteller van.
We need to clarify what this is, because I think
define it. It's a video. You can go check it out on.
In Europe, Volkswagen has a work van called the Volkswagen Transporter, and one of the options that they will sell you is something called the California, which is a fully kitted out pop top camper van right from the dealer. So this isn't some conversion. Volkswagen, you know, will sell you through a dealership a fully done little baby RV, basically. And it's not really like the Sprinter 4x4. It's much, much smaller. It's also not quite as off-road oriented.
No. But you can get it in all-wheel drive.
But can you get it in 4Motion?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
But the point is, it's a really cool kind of retro look at the Westphalia version of the old school iconic Volkswagen.
It's incredibly thoughtfully designed. I mean,
it's really well done. Yeah.
Tons of engineering, right? You've got everything you'd want in a little tiny van for overlanding, including a sink, a refrigerator, curtains, integrated. Picnic chairs, integrated picnic table.
I'm starting a movement to kill the word overlanding.
Yeah, overlanding.
I think
means
it's
nothing.
Very, very overdone. Well,
like
perhaps
5 years ago, it meant something.
Perhaps
now.
Not overlanding, but perhaps the ultimate camping machine. Yeah. If you wanted to take a cool vacation in a really unique warranty van, the Transporter California would be just amazing. But they don't bring it over.
No, and when we, I think Nathan and Andre, got to drive it around California like maybe 3 years ago, and then we went to Europe, and I was looking at them, zipping around there, and I had huge. Huge like lust for them, and they're expensive. They're like 60,000-70,000 euros, and they probably have to be in that same number here. But I think even at $80,000, they would sell, like I said, the balls off of them, because we just took the storyteller, basically Sprinter Mercedes, right, to Moab, and that bad boy was $195,000, and they're selling them because there's like a 6 month wait to get one. So yeah, I don't understand who's doing the product planning in Wolfsburg, but it feels tone deaf to what's happening in the market here.
So the base Golf, though, bringing it full circle here, great little car in the seventh generation and the sixth and the fifth. And it's a little sad that we're not getting it, but at least for those looking for the performance version, they're not killing it altogether, and the GTI is still on its way to the States.
Why do you think they cut the Golf? Why? You just not enough sales?
I don't know if the sales
are buying cars.
They're selling so many Tiguans, and now hopefully the Taos as well, the little crossover, that I think they think that class is no longer interested in buying a little hatchback. They'd rather buy a hatchback with some cladding that's lifted and marketed as an SUV.
Maybe they should have thrown some cladding on it.
Yeah, they did. The Alltrack. That's what the Alltrack was.
Yeah, but I'm saying just on the Golf. Maybe throw some cladding on the Golf.
But that's what a Taos is. The Taos is not like a full-blown SUV.
Give it a one-inch lift.
That's what the Taos is. It's just the worst Golf.
Dude, the Taos, I hate to say this, but the Taos is a little bit early out of the oven, let's say. That transmission has issues.
We just
reviewed it. Check out our review of our TFL car. It's a really cool little car, but in terms of actually off-roading it, it's a little half-baked in some respects. I think the transmission tuning is especially problematic right now.
I do not understand the want of this class of car. The Mazda CX-30, the Toyota CHR, the Corolla Cross now. The Ford EcoSport. I mean, basically, you're just buying yourself a worse hatchback. It's a little bit taller, but it handles worse. It's less fuel efficient than a traditional hatchback because it's more weight and it's taller. I mean, you're not going to take it off road because they can't go off road. What's the appeal?
I should kind of clarify. It's not the transmission tuning. It's a transmission tuning in the Taos with the turbo engine. The two are like when the power comes on, it takes. There's just horrendous turbo lag, and then when it does actually... It's like the two aren't talking to each other.
The issue, Dad, in with my opinion, is not that the Taos is all that bad. It's just that classic...
The Taos is amazing for a amount of room. It's an amazing amount of room in that.
That class of car, I'm saying, makes no sense to me. All of them. The Volkswagen, the Ford, the Toyota, the Honda. I mean, just buy a normal... Just build a normal hatchback. Go buy that. It's a better version of that car.
One of the most popular cars out there... there is means to my madness, is the car we just bought, which is a Crosstrek XV. And basically, they took an Impreza, they threw some cladding on
and
it.
And they made it worse.
No, they made it very popular. They gave it, 8.9 inches of ground clearance, right? And they put symmetric all-wheel drive on it. And it's one of the most popular cars Subaru sells. Why not do the same thing to the Golf?
Well, that's what they did with the Taos. It's the same car.
No, it's not. It's not the same car. The Taos is a completely different chassis. It's a completely different vehicle.
I know, but from a fundamental thought process, it's just a slightly taller Golf. And I understand that the Crosstrek is really
popular. It's not. The Golf has all this heritage, and it has this reputation of being one of the best cars in the world. So just throw some cladding on it and call it the Golf Cross, or I don't know, whatever you want, Cross Turismo, whatever you want. want to call it, and make it a little bit more off-road, or we maybe stick some off-road lights on it. I would buy that in a heartbeat. And I think that would give the Crosstrek a run for its money. It would make the Golf relevant again instead of just killing it and going to this silly Taos thing.
They literally did do exactly what you said. It was called the Alltrek.
No, the Alltrek was a station wagon.
But it was just a slightly bigger Golf.
No. It was not a Golf.
It was based on the Golf platform.
It was a station wagon.
Based on the Golf platform, though.
It doesn't matter.
Other issue is that the Golf in the States never has had all-wheel drive unless you get the Alltrek version.
So
we've never gotten an all-wheel drive Golf to lift.
Why is there some taboo about putting all-wheel drive into a Golf that you can't do it?
Unpopular opinion, too. I don't understand why you'd get a Crosstrek over an Impreza. It's just a worse Impreza. It's more expensive. It's less fuel efficient. It has no more room. The ground clearance is a little better, but you're not going to take it off-road. The Impreza is pretty much the same all-wheel drive system. Why would you spend more and get a Crosstrek? My friends are like, oh, I'm going to get a Crosstrek, not an Impreza. I'm like, why? And they're like, because it looks a little bit cooler. I'm like, that's a silly reason to go buy a car.
You know, people buy vehicles because they talk to their heart, right? And the Impreza is just this kind of like, in a way, the Golf is, right? A runabout that has this reputation of being an affordable runabout, whereas the Crosstrek all of a sudden turns it into adventure. I'm not saying realistically there's adventure there, but with the cladding and with the lift, it just makes it look that much better, and it just talks to my heart, whereas the Impreza doesn't. And I think the same thing would happen with the Golf. Anyway,
talks to your heart.
It does, yeah. It speaks emotionally to me.
Emotionally,
I want that vehicle.
It's just a worse Impreza.
I don't know.
don't get that.
How come sometimes when you take a person that's a brunette and you make them into a blonde guy or gal, they become more attractive? I don't know why that is. It just is, dude. Or the other way, right. It just is.
All right, okay.
All right, I don't know. It just is. All right, number 9, Kia 900.
K900, yeah.
Kia K900. The Kia K9, which of course wouldn't work here, was turned into the Kia K900 when it came to America, and it didn't work either. It's a great car. Well, underappreciated.
It's an expensive luxury Kia sedan, which...
And you said the word there, you kiss of death, one word.
What, Kia sedan?
No, sedan. Sedans are just—it's a dying segment. Nobody's buying sedans.
I know.
And so you're not only selling something that nobody wants, but you're selling into a massive headwind. You're selling into a massive headwind of very luxurious, Lexus-like vehicle, but under a brand that has a reputation for being an entry-level brand. It's almost the kiss of death.
So I
combining
think that,
those three things.
I think that's why that brand, the Hyundai Kia family, brought out Genesis, right? It's so right. They could sell luxury sedans in a different brand with a different clientele. But also in that same boat is the Kia Cadenza, which is another very comfortable, luxurious car.
Number 8 on our list?
Yeah, number 8 on our list.
Always, once again, same exact issue.
Right.
I mean, I think a Cadenza, which is not something you think of when you're thinking of a fast and sporty and cool car.
You think of Cadenza?
I do, when
What's
I hear Cadenza.
What's a Cadenza? Is that like a little hut?
A Cadenza.
Is that like a little building?
No, a credenza is like,
a
set of
hut.
Shelves.
Are you sure?
A credenza is like a little thing you put your clothes into in your living room.
You're right. I thought it was like a little hut.
No.
Like a little tiki hut.
No, it's like where you store your socks.
Oh, well, the Cadenza was a comfortable Kia, which no one bought, unfortunately. So Kia is going to be focusing more on their key core products like the K5 and the Sportage, and now the upcoming EVs as well, and they are dropping these luxury sedans.
So I would say, if you're looking for an incredibly well-built, an incredibly thoughtful and terrific and bargain sedan, instead of going and getting an Accord or a Camry as a used vehicle, find a used Kia K900 or a Kia Cadenza. They're just incredible vehicles. These are the definition of two unappreciated cars. But once again, the same thing that's going to make them hard to sell new is going to make them hard to sell used, right? People don't have the understanding that Kia has just pulled itself up by its bootstraps and become just a really credible, well-engineered, well-thought-out brand, right, that builds cars that rival any of the best from Japan. And unfortunately, people, I think when they think of Kias, they still think of, like the basic entry-level car from 20 years ago when the company first came to America.
They are a little bit ugly.
They're very. I don't know if they're ugly. They're just very stodgy.
They're a little ugly. Stodgy, I don't. I never really liked the look of either the Keenan 900 or the Cadenza.
They're a little old manny to some extent. They don't like resonate.
It's a little bit of Buick Park Avenue in there.
Yeah. They don't like resonate with exactly the hot hatch crowd.
Yes, I agree completely.
And the next car, talk about, you know, now this is a car, and I apologize to all of you owners, but this is the definition of a car that was bashed over the nose with the ugly
stick.
That was
cool, futuristic,
no, it was
unappreciated.
No, oh my gosh.
I like this car. I thought this was a good car.
You've got the heart of a 1950s accountant if you like this car.
I don't think it's a handsome car, but I thought it was a kind of an interesting design and engineering experiment. And that is number 7 on our list, the Honda Clarity.
Yeah. You know, it came in, I think, I want to say 3 flavors. So there was, of course, the fuel cell version.
Yes, hydrogen.
There was the all-electric version.
The battery electric, yep.
And then there was a hybrid.
Right.
And they were all ugly.
Well.
I think, look, if you're going to cover up the rear wheels.
They'd skirted rear wheels. That's pretty cool.
No, it's not.
That's pretty funky.
No. I think anytime you put skirts on a car, you are creating, if I'm being kind, a beetle. If I'm being unkind, a cockroach.
Oh, okay.
It's got that kind of it's scurrying across the road instead of driving across the road.
They are a little weird to look at, I agree. But the fuel cell I thought was pretty neat. I just really like hydrogen cars. I don't know if they make a lot of sense in 2021, but man, they're cool. So I really just love everything fuel cell. The EV was kind of crummy, actually.
The EV only had 80 miles of range.
Yeah, it was not great.
And it wasn't a California compliance car. It was Honda came out with an EV where Tesla was doing 300 to 400 miles of range, and most other automakers now, the Bolt was out, and they came back with one that had 80 miles of range, or maybe it was 90, I forget. I drove it. The other thing about that car was interiors are spectacular. It's like the exterior and interior designers did not even talk to each other. The interiors are just beautiful on those cars.
I don't even know what they look like.
They look very expensive. They look very upscale. A lot of interesting design language. But unfortunately, the outside of the car looked like, you know, Honda was channeling their inner Buick.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, I guess.
Yeah, it was
kind of looks
cool.
Like an Accord. It looks like a funky Accord inside.
I think a lot of the current Accord and Civic design language came from the Clarity, at least internally.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is a nice interior. Yeah, I don't think that the Clarity was particularly well loved for anything in particular.
Look how modern that looks. Look at those clean lines.
Yeah, it's nice. It's very nice. They did a good job with it.
It was, I would call that soothing. It was one of those cars where you sat inside of it, and if you were stressed out, all of a sudden that stress would just melt away because everything you looked at felt harmonious in its design.
Harmonious.
Yeah, it's just you had to get in the car. You had to maybe close your eyes when you walked to it. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So Honda Prologue will kick off the next chapter, replacing the Clarity. Adieu to the Clarity and hello Prologue. That's
Prologue.
Coming.
Prologue?
Prologue, yeah.
It sounds like some kind of diet supplement.
Apparently that's what Zach says. A Prologue will... must be the new... the replacement.
Some kind of procedure the dermatologist? What is
honest,
that, a
Tommy,
Prologue?
I'm not aware of the Prologue. I'm not up on the Prologue. But it will apparently take over from the Clarity.
I mean, is it Prologue? It's P-R-O-L-O-G-U-E.
Prologue.
Prologue.
You know what a Prologue is?
No, is it a procedure?
No, it's not.
Does it require a finger up the bum?
A Prologue is like the chapter in front of the first chapter.
Oh, like a Prologue. Well, why wouldn't that be the... Why would they... But this is coming after the Clarity.
Right. And so not in front of it.
That's...
I don't know.
Should it be a postscript? Maybe the Honda postscript?
I don't know. Honda has some funky names for some of their cars.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I like that. But maybe it'll be cool.
It's better than ZX14-395, which is what everybody else is going to.
Well, that's the new Toyota.
Q15, Z58, whatever they are.
Toyota for their new... Yeah, Toyota's that new electric crossover.
Look.
They took the name from Samsung, actually, in their TVs.
One of the coolest cars ever that was a Honda was a Prelude. So Prelude and Prologue, very similar.
Prelude is a cool name, but Prologue sounds
Prelude... Prelude is to music what prologue is to literature.
I know what a prologue is. I just didn't put that together in my head as being
They didn't consult the millennials.
So
if they consulted the millennials, they would have called it the White Claw.
Probably true, Dad.
Or Monster Energy.
Probably
Six
true.
Hour Energy. The new Honda White Claw.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like that very much. But anyways, I do not design cars, and that's a good thing. Number six on the list is the Mazda CX-3, which goes against your thought process that a lifted, by the way, hatchback will sell like hotcakes. The CX-3 is a lifted Mazda.
Did they put cladding on it?
Yes.
They did not.
They did put cladding on it.
They didn't put cladding on us. They did not clad.
They did. Have you seen the CX-30?
Yes.
That's the CX-30 is a Mazda 3 with cladding.
There's no cladding on that thing.
The CX-3?
Yeah.
It's got a little cladding.
I don't. There's no cladding. There's no cladding. If it is, it's body colored and it's almost invisible. Sorry, dude.
This was kind of
There's a very simple recipe. You need to lift the car.
It's got cladding. Look at that puppy.
And you need to. I don't want to look away. Look it up online if you're Googling this.
It's got cladding.
You need this. I think the recipe is you need to give it enough of a lift to notice that it's actually taller. It can't just be a little bit of a lift, right? The Subaru Crosstrek is 8.9 inches, which is a significant amount.
You need to lift it enough to make the fuel economy and ride and handling worse, is what you're saying.
That to me does not look lifted enough.
It's lifted.
It does not look
lifted. It's got cladding. Look, the whole side is cladding in the CX-3.
You also then, which this doesn't have as well, right? You also need to give it kind of the
marketing?
The language of off-roaders.
What?
So that jutting out front jaw that I see on that car is not the language of off-roaders. It's not a skid plate. That language, you know, good approach to departure angles. Says to me, I'm gonna break my chin on the first rock that I hit.
What do you mean the language? Like a spritzer?
The design language of off-roaders, right? So you need good approach design, good approach departure angles, good breakover angle. You also need like off-roady wheels. Those are nothing, if anything, but off. I mean, Mazda just does not build. And I'm not sure they know how to build off-roaders, right? That's the one thing Mazda doesn't do.
So what you're saying is they need to make it look off-roady, but not actually have any of the off-road
credentials. That works.
Oh, my goodness. That works. What is our car market in 2021?
Look, Tommy, I mean, think about, like, look at what hot hatches did, right? Most of the aero cladding on even the Honda Type R, most of that stuff that's on there, right, does some aero. But for the most part, it's cosmetic.
But here's the issue with that argument, is that the hot hatch actually drove and handled like a sports car.
Yeah, and this will too if you give it a good approach, departure angles, and good tires and good wheels.
A RAV4 TRD off-road does not drive and handle off-road like a 4Runner.
Well, once again, I think the analogy is perfect. You know, you need to give it not just the math, but also...
what you're saying there is that a base Crosstrek, because it's got the language of off-roading... An actual off-roader, because a Golf GTI in 1978 could handle and out-accelerate.
What are the two most important things when you're off-roading? I think it's
a low-range transfer case.
No,
is number one.
No,
for
that's
me.
Serious. We're not. That's
well,
real
that's what you need for off-roading.
No,
you need
a
low-range
transfer
case.
What you
case.
Need is good tires. That's
which
the most important.
Our Crosstrek doesn't have.
And you need, you know, a good enough
approach angle.
No, I would say ground clearance. Ground clearance is more important. Those two things. If you get those two things, you could take any vehicle off road.
No, you can't take it.
Yes, you can.
Dad, this is what you're saying though. Is you're encouraging people to go take like a RAV4 TRD off road, and they're gonna find it
they're selling the.
I know, but just because it looks like an off-roader doesn't mean it is an off-roader.
Once again, Tommy,
would you take a Crosstrek off-road?
Like, I remember those Evos that had those little shark fins on the roof. You think those things did anything at 50 miles an hour? No.
Those Evos out-accelerated Ferraris of their day. I mean, they were super fast.
Yes, and a Crosstrek will go places that a Golf won't.
I know, but it won't go places a true off-roader won't.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That Evo is not going to take on a race car.
But in the 70s...
You can't compare it to that. It's not going to...
In
you know.
The 70s, when the hot hatch emerged, it could take on high-performance car.
No, it would take on a... No, they were quick, but they were never like
around quick. A circuit, I think in early 70s or
no, they would,
late
no,
70s
even
Golf
the GTI. Would lift its tire. It was a fun car, but it was certainly, 98 horsepower? Come on.
I know, Dad, but my point is that they actually had real performance that you could quantify.
And the Crosstrek has real off-roadiness
really?
That you can
does
quantify.
It,
yes.
Does a CVT two-liter car... Crosstrek
yes,
have real off-road performance.
I'm just saying, if you want to do that comparison, take a standard Golf and take, you know, front-wheel drive and take a Crosstrek and take them off-road, and you will see the Crosstrek will go, you know, 10 times as far as that front-wheel drive Golf will.
It'll go further, no doubt, but I'm not sure that
times
it'll go...
When you're going front-wheel drive versus all-wheel drive, you're going, you know...
Right, but the
8.9
issue that
inches
is
versus like 6 inches.
People aren't taking, for the most part, aren't taking Crosstreks and RAV4s off-road. They're driving them on the road.
Once again, it doesn't matter. You know this by now. It doesn't matter what the car really can do. It matters what you think that you're going to do. Most people will not buy a Porsche, which is a very well-engineered and racetrack capable car, right? And for not even the Porsche, let's talk about like a GT350 Mustang, a GT500, you know, even a Corvette. Most people who buy those, 95% of them, or maybe more, 98% of them, will never take it on a track. They buy them because they think they can, and they can.
Do you think that
they'll be okay, right? But it won't compare to a race car.
I get that. But do you think a CX-3 would have sold if they put BFGs on it and more cladding?
Yeah.
Yikes. I don't know if I agree with that at all.
I think now because you said it yourself, overlanding, which means nothing anymore, has become so huge. Yeah, people want that. People want cars that express their lifestyle.
The CX-30 is selling really well.
Great.
You know, and that's just another lifted Mazda 3.
Yeah, well, there you go. I think you made an argument.
All right. Number five on our list is the 370Z.
Okay.
Apparently, this one is finally on its way out because Nissan has sold out of their 2020 370Zs according to their own site. And the new Z car will debut on August 17th. It should have a twin turbo V6, an all new body, new tech, and so on.
I just got the invite.
Nice.
Yeah, it's in New York.
Sweet. I'm really excited for that. The 370Z was a continuation of the Z car. I don't think it was the best Z car they've ever done. No. I actually don't think the 350 was. Either, but hopefully the 370 brings back some of the essence of the performance.
So as you know, your grandfather, my dad, was a huge Z car fan.
He had a ton of them.
I had three of them, and the last Z that I purchased, and maybe, you know, if this means anything to anybody, but was the 300ZX twin turbo. After that, they just became, it just became like if I felt like Nissan put all their engineering prowess and track prowess into the GTR, and then the Z just kind of was left to wither on the vine. You know, they kept updating it and making it a little bit more modern, but it never had that magic after the 300ZX twin turbo, right? It just became very heavy and not particularly, even the Nismo versions, which were better, still, I think, you know, lacked that magic that the original vehicles had. I can't put my finger on it. I drove the 350, I drove the 370. Maybe it was a lack of the turbos from the one that I was used to. I don't know. Why do you think those cars just never resonated that much?
I just don't think that they offered the same level of performance, especially in a straight line, for the money that the old ones offered. So especially like the twin turbo ones and most of the turbo Zs, I think offered a lot of, especially straight line performance, which is what people often buy cars from relative to like Mustangs and Camaros at the time.
So I was,
and the new one just doesn't.
I was a guest of Nissan at their historic collection and I got to drive the first Z, right?
The 240.
Yeah. And that was, you know, just magic, Tommy. That had that incredible, ability to be not, you know, this is what the GT, the BRZ is supposed to be, basically, right? A car that's all about balance. But that car just was alive in your hands. Even though it didn't have a lot of power, it just was incredibly fun to drive. It was responsive. It was connected to the road, shifting it through its gears. It was happy to oblige whatever you wanted to do to it. And it just felt really fun to drive. And that's a really hard thing to do. And plus, I think styling-wise, they also hit it on the nose, right? Because it had that long, almost Jaguar-esque nose with, those classic proportions. It was a car that comes along maybe once in a lifetime. And it's hard to replicate that.
Interesting.
Yeah, sorry. It was just, I love that car. If I could find a good one, I would buy it in a heartbeat, but they've gotten very expensive.
So number four on our list is, we're going to have this argument again, is the Volvo V90, the standard wagon.
Well, we'll read what Zach wrote here.
Yes, the regular wagon, not the cross country.
Because
the crossover has killed it. For once again, another reason I don't understand. The V90 looks better than the cross country. It drives better than the cross country. I think it's more fuel efficient. It's a better performing vehicle. But for some reason, the cross country is still going on because consumers just want cladding and, like you said, slight bits of big tires on their cars. And that's what the cross country has that the V90 doesn't.
Well, these numbers are interesting.
Yeah, they sold 1,500 V90s in the past 3 years, from 2017 to 2020. And they sold 132,000 XC90s in the same time frame, which is granted bigger and not quite the same class. But Volvo confirmed that the V90 will not be coming back for 2022. The V90, by the way, was special order anyway, so you had to go to your dealer and be like, I specifically don't want the lifted cross, the lifted version. I want the sporty one.
Well, you know how I said at the beginning of the show that sedans are almost all but dead, a dying segment?
Yes.
There's one segment that is actually like racing it to the grave and is, you know, in the lead right now, and that is, of course, the station wagon.
The station wagon.
Which is a huge shame. I love station wagons. And, you know, talking about one of the best station wagons that's unheralded or unappreciated is the V60, right? The smaller wagon that Volvo builds.
Yep.
I took that off-road as well. Just an incredible car. Once again, they have like a cross-country version of it that, you know, is just a lifted looks appearance. But yeah, I love my Volvo wagons. And thank God that the Europeans are still buying them. But here in America, you know, it's just gone right now. I don't know why the wagon is out of favor, and the crossover and the SUV have taken over. But it's not just dead, but it's, you know, put a nail in it and, unfortunately, you know, throw some dirt and walk away.
I, once again, and I'll say this for the last time because I know it's not a popular opinion in the new car market. If I have a choice of buying a station wagon or a crossover, 100% of the time I'd get the station wagon.
Every journalist says that, but nobody.
Yeah, I know, but nobody buys them. And I do think that you're right. People do want the perception of having, you know, the adventure lifestyle. But a station wagon will drive better than a crossover.
A dog can get into the back of it, actually.
Lower to the ground, yes. Yep. Handles like a car, right, with the utility of a...
It's sexier.
...of an SUV. I think it looks better.
Yeah.
Anyways, look forward to reading those comments.
I think part of it, too, is because of the higher seating positions in a crossover or the even higher position in like an SUV, think of like the Defender. I think a lot of people like being up high, you know, being able to see over the tops of sedans, being able to have this kind of, let's call it the Land Rover command driving position. I think that's what sells. I think when you get inside of a station wagon, you're down low and you're more of a, kind of in a sports car, but at the same time on the road, you feel a little bit inferior if I can even say that.
Sure.
I think that's true to all the people who are driving around in their crossovers.
Yeah, I understand that theory. Yeah, and I think that is part of it. I don't buy into that theory, but I understand why someone like my mom especially likes to be in an SUV because she feels like she has more control.
Well, she had the wagon, right? She had the Volvo.
Right.
And then she moved from that. We went from the Volvo wagon to an SUV, a crossover, and now she's had nothing but crossovers.
Yep. Yeah, I know. That's what,
and I've suggested buying a wagon, but she just looks at me like
she's crazy. She's like, no, it's too low. I can't see over traffic.
Yeah.
All right. So number three, the Honda Civic Coupe. So Honda announced that the 2020 Coupe is going away, but now that we have the newest generation of Civic, it's not coming back in the new car. Not that you saw many Civic Coupes anyways. We're still going to get the normal sedan and hatch as well as SI and Type R. SI is now sedan only and Type R is still a hatchback.
And by the way, I just want to, I don't like to leave questions out there. My wife and your mom is driving a BMW X5 right now, in case people are wondering what she's driving.
Yep, she has an X5.
Yeah.
So going back to the Civic, the SI and Type R are manual only, which is interesting in a market that is moving away from manuals. I think this is pretty silly, actually. We were talking about this in the car yesterday about the Viper having manual-only options. And I was also talking to the engineer behind the Fiat 500 Abarth, the little performance Fiat. And they sold so many once they introduced the automatic transmission in the Abarth.
Look, here's the thing. I'm going to blame mainly the Germans on this one.
Whoa.
But let's face it. The Germans have killed the coupe. When the four-door, the sedan was a four-door, the coupe was a two-door, right? That was very simple. And the shooting brake, if you're, you know, into like the traditional names for these things, was a station wagon, right?
Or the estate. Kind of weird wagon, yeah.
Right. That was, I mean, there were three kinds of cars, that, you know, at once upon a time.
Were the good old days.
There
I like those
sedan,
days.
There was a coupe, and a wagon.
Those were simple days. We didn't have crossovers. What a time to be alive.
And then the Germans decided, the coupe will have four doors. And I'm like, no, it shouldn't have four doors. It should have, that's what makes a coupe so cool, right? These long-ass doors that are impossible to get in and out of when you park them at the local grocery store because they swing out like 15 meters past the car. But it's what makes it sexy and fun and different. And it says that, you know, I am... you know, youthful and ready to rock and roll. And then they decided, you know what, you can have your cake and eat it too. So what we're going to do is create a four-door
Coupe.
And then basically that created a vehicle where it was confused as to its own identity, and the back seat became unusable.
And then they had, especially BMW, so then they had the X5 SUV, which was great, makes a lot of sense, the little SUV, the big SUV. And then they made the coupe version of the SUV, which made less sense, which is the X6.
I agree.
Right?
Yeah.
And then they decided to split the gap with these horrible things called the GT. Do you remember the GT? They took like a 3 and a 5 series.
Yeah, they're still there.
And I think they killed them finally. I don't think you can get the GT. Because the GT had those hideous like half coupe, half station wagon rear ends. I'm pretty sure they're dead.
I think you can still get...
I don't think you can get the GT.
Why don't you Google it and I'll keep... doing my rant about
the GTs were just terrible.
About the four-door coupes. The reason that the back seat is unusable is because they kept the roof line of the coupe, which was low and kind of stretched out, which doesn't work in a four-door because then you try to get in the back seat, but you basically have no headroom or shoulder room to say. So it looks like you should be able to, like in a sedan, it looks like you should have room back there, but then when you get into it, you don't. I guess that's better than trying to crawl into the back of a four-seater coupe, but nevertheless, it doesn't solve the back seat problem or the headroom problem. It just creates an easier way to get it out of.
They are in fact dead.
Are they dead?
Yes, thank goodness.
All right,
kill those puppies with fire. That's what I'm going.
Yeah. So anyway, and I think also once upon a time a hot hatch, right, was relatively easy to define. I mean, the GTI was a classic hot hatch, right? And if you were to draw it, you'd follow the roof line and then it kind of dropped at a 90-degree angle, and that was a hot hatch. But now with, like, you know, all these cars, like even the Tesla Model Y, right, that are basically hatchback coupes. Does that make sense?
I like what Motor Trend called these GTs, by the way.
What do they call them?
The hunchback.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I think there's just a lot of confusion now, right? They look like some cars. It's funny because some cars look like they should be a hatchback, but they're not, right? They have, yeah, I know you're looking at the BMW there, but you see what I'm saying, right? There's some cars that look like it should be a hatch, but then it's got a traditional trunk.
Yes.
And then there are some cars that look like they should have a traditional trunk, but then the whole back
open. Hatchback.
Yeah, and I think that's created so much confusion that it just has made it difficult for manufacturers now to define the segment that they're selling into.
I was just in that same predicament. I was looking at the new BMW i4, which is... once again, kind of like that fastback coupe-looking sedan design. And on my video, I lifted up the trunk area, and the whole thing lifted up, and I said kind of like a hatchback. And the reason I said that is because when I say hatchback, people equate that with like a Golf.
Right, yeah.
Right? Or like a little economy car, like a Yaris. It's just, it's a mess right now.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm not surprised that the Honda Civic Coupe is dead. All right, what's number two on our list?
Mazda 6. So the Mazda 6, the midsize sedan, is no more. The front-wheel drive platform is on its way out, but apparently there's a new rear-wheel drive platform coming with apparently a rumored inline 6 and plug-in hybrid options. Mazda has big plans apparently for this new Mazda 6. It will look dramatically different if and when it comes back to the States.
You know, the Mazda 6 was one of the best cars in its segment. I don't think it got the respect that it should have gotten.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, it was a great looking car. It's got incredible driving dynamics. It's well built. But yet, you know, when you think of Mazdas, there's only one car, like two cars, but really only one car that means anything, and that's the CX-5, right? That's the one that overwhelmingly sells. And then there's the Miata.
Well, I think those are the two,
like, it's like, you know, that's kind of the dirty secret of Mazda, right? Ford's dirty secret is that the F-150 is the goose that laid the golden egg, and people know that because they take pride in it. But with Mazda, it's really the CX-5.
I think they're selling a lot of CX-30s. I don't know the exact number. I'll have to look it up. But I think they're selling a lot of the CX-30s, which is replace the CX-3.
I want to say the CX-5 accounts for like 50 or 60% of every
Mazda. I bet it's huge. Yeah, but I mean, not to discount, the CX-9 is also pretty popular.
It's weird. The CX-9 isn't as popular as the CX-5.
It's not as popular, it's
like the CX-5 is in that segment, one of the leading vehicles in the segment from a very small car manufacturer.
I think they still sell quite a few.
Somehow, like, the word has gotten out that car is great, and like it might be like word of mouth where people talk to each other and they're like, "Hey, I got this thing, and you should get one." I don't know what it is, but it's the car that built Mazda, or that's keeping Mazda afloat right now.
Yeah, I like the CX-5 a lot, but I'm not saying like CX-30 and CX-9 are the best in their class, but I think they sell quite a few of them.
Anyway, it's just a funny brand when it comes to like those kinds of numbers. I love the brand in itself. I think it's, once again, it's relatively unappreciated. I think Mazda builds high quality cars. They're very old school, as far as I can tell from some of the people I've talked to who are familiar with kind of the company culture. It's a very old school company. It's very small. You know, it's based in, I think, Hiroshima, right, in Japan, and that's kind of like the heartland of Japan. So it just has a different kind of vibe to it. And, the other problem with Mazda is that it's kind of in this dead man zone for car companies, right? It's not small enough to be a boutique car company where, like Ferrari, where you can just get away with selling, you know, a small amount of cars. But it's not big enough to have kind of that like, you know, Ford or GM or Toyota, Honda kind of, you know, mass of production.
Very true.
It's tough. All right. And number one.
Yeah. Number one is the Land Cruiser. So this has been talked about a lot, but this is the 200 series Land Cruiser. It's the current one you can buy right now. And it is no more apparently for the United States market. It was introduced in 2008. Is that right? 2007?
Yeah.
I think it was 08.
We had the first
model year was 08 in the States.
Yeah.
And it's big 5.7 liter V8, legendary rock crushing reliability. And there's a new one that they just released or unveiled for foreign markets, but apparently that one's not coming stateside.
Yeah, ironically, it's selling really well now. They've sold 3,500 so far, which is more than they sold.
With the Land Cruiser?
Yeah, in 7 months.
But they do have that cool new Heritage Edition, yeah. Which is a really cool trim. It's got old school.
I think people have figured it out that it's going away. And so maybe Toyota will change its mind and, you know. Maybe they're playing the long game here where it's going away, guys. Oh my gosh, sales have doubled. Guess what? Because sales are so popular, you've demanded it, so we're gonna keep it and we're gonna bring back the 300 series.
Maybe you're right. That would be funny. But consistently the 200 series sells just a few thousand a year.
Yeah.
Right? And it has since 2008, and it's just in relative Toyota's market share and the number of units they sell, it's hardly any.
Right.
Having said that though, its cousin, the LX 570 from Lexus, sells in pretty big volume relative to the Land Cruiser. So the rumor is that they're going to bring the 300 series to the States in Lexus form, but not in the Land Cruiser name.
So I would say you kill that car at your own risk, Toyota. I understand that it's about economics, but you know there are certain cars in every brand that carry that brand's DNA, right, that represent the best of that brand. And with Toyota, with its... It may not represent the general Toyota brand. I think if you look at a Toyota, probably the vehicle that represents its brand more for the general buying public is a Corolla, right? That they sold Corolla, by the way, is the best-selling car ever. People think it's the Beetle. It's the Corolla. So that's the car, I think, that carries the DNA for the brand. But the DNA for the off-roading part of the brand is definitely in the Land Cruiser. The number of people who have a warm spot in their heart, the number of people who have owned them around the world, not just in America, is incredible. There's a giant community that's built around them. It's like the product that significantly represents Toyota's off-road kind of cred. And like I say, even though there's a Lexus version of it, when you kill that, you do it at your own peril, because I think that the ramifications are more than just the cost of only selling 3,000 a year.
It's just,
I think it says something about you as a brand when you kill your most iconic off-roader.
Very upset over there. I personally am fine with the Land Cruiser dying in the States with the big caveat, if they bring back a vehicle like the FJ Cruiser, because I love the Land Cruiser, but it's just gotten so expensive. I mean, we're talking about a $90,000 SUV here. And they start at like 85 or 88. I would love to see the FJ Cruiser come back, still maintain that, you know, somewhat of the Land Cruiser lineage to compete with the Bronco and the Wrangler and that class. I think that would be hugely popular.
I think you put your finger on it, Tommy. I think Toyota had perhaps some of the worst timing in the industry. They killed off the FJ Cruiser just as, you know, off-roading and overlanding was becoming the thing.
Nissan with the Xterra.
Right. I mean, you know, Jeep is on track to sell 250,000 Wranglers. Who would have thunk, right? Quarter million, it's insane. Quarter million Wranglers.
And the buzz around the Bronco is just through the roof.
Through the roof. You can't get a Bronco. You know, they're sold out for the next year. And, you know, right before all that happened, Toyota basically took the most capable competitor to those cars, which was the FJ, right? I mean, there's a 4Runner, but the FJ was the one. If you're going to compete against the Wrangler,
more the fun vehicle.
It's a lifestyle vehicle. The 4Runner is more of a, you know, just a traditional vehicle, but the FJ is definitely a lifestyle vehicle. So is the Bronco, and so is, of course, the Wrangler. And they decided to, you know, to pull the plug on it. Only in America, though. You can still buy them in places like South Africa and the Middle East, I believe.
For the FJ Cruiser?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was pretty old. I mean, that's another vehicle that came out in 07, I think, was the first model year.
Sure. I mean, you got to update it.
Yeah. What I'd like to see is just take the current fifth generation 4Runner, rip the body off, put something cool retro and convertible on there, leave the 4-liter and the 5-speed, whatever, and they'll sell a ton of them.
Here's the other thing, Tommy. Right now, you know what's one of the hottest segments out there right now?
What?
Big SUVs. They're having their moment. Big SUVs are... I'm talking like Tahoes. I'm talking Yukons,
but they
Navigators.
They have a player in that segment, the Sequoia.
It's old and it's not exactly, you know, rocking it.
Right.
I'm saying that segment is one of the hottest. If you chart like the crossover SUV segment, that segment is on fire right now. And when that segment is on fire, they're killing their best vehicle in that segment.
But it's just too expensive. I mean,
how much is a Tahoe now?
Tahoe
how much
starts is that? $49,000 or something.
No, not when you get the off-roady one.
The off-roady one's what?
Z71.
$67,000, if you want.
Yeah, now you're approaching Land Cruiser.
You're $20,000.
How about an Escalade?
Yeah, but Escalade is a premium brand that competes with the Lexus.
So the one we had here, how much was it? $112,000?
Right, and that competes with the LX 570, you know? The Land Cruiser is just a weird, it's just a weird thing. I mean, it's a great vehicle, one of the most long-lived vehicles you can buy ever. But it's just Land Cruiser people are going to buy Land Cruiser. And if you're not a Land Cruiser person, it's hard to justify spending $90,000 on a Toyota badge. It just is in the States.
I guess it's kind of like, to me, it feels like, let's say that, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Let's say that.
So like, let's look at our neighborhood, right? Our neighbor buys a lot of fancy cars every year. And he is pretty brand focused, right? And he just went out and bought a Defender. He's had an X7. You know, he's well within this Land Cruiser price range, but I don't think it's ever occurred to him, partly because of that Toyota badge on the front of it. He'd probably consider the LX. You know, the LX is the same vehicle, just as long-lived, but it's got a more panache around it, and the Land Cruiser just doesn't have that among that luxury segment.
I'm just saying, you know, it would be like, let's say that you go to the coffee shop and the hottest new drink is a cappuccino, right? I'm just picking a kind of drink that people, all of a sudden, everybody decides, you know, the coffee I want is cappuccino, right? And you're Toyota and you're like, you know what? Let's do it with cappuccinos. We don't need them anymore.
But they have the Sequoia.
No, I mean, I don't get it.
And they still have that class.
It's not the same, dude.
It's not the same.
The Sequoia, I don't even know how to spell it, let alone... Seriously, let alone having the same brand value that a Land Cruiser
There's
has.
There's a Q in there somewhere. But my point is that I don't think anyone's like, well, I have my Armani suit, and I'm thinking about buying a Navigator or a Mercedes GLS. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go buy a Toyota. Now, if the Land Cruiser was 50K, oh my God, they'd sell, I think, a lot of them in a lot of ways.
All right, let me give you another example, okay? Which, I think if you kill this, you do it at your own peril. Let me give you, I think, a very pertinent example, right? Right now, what Mercedes has the longest wait and has the highest markup, which out of all the Mercedes...
The G,
exactly. But there's like 3,000 models, and the
why
one
is that
everybody wants is the G.
But why is that?
Because it's new and because that segment is red hot.
No. People want the G because people on Beverly Hills drive G-Wagon.
Yes, and if
but people on Beverly Hills don't drive Land Cruisers.
Yes, they do.
They do not.
They do,
I've
Tommy.
Never seen a Land Cruiser on Beverly Hills.
Believe me, people in the know, it's one of those things like if you're in the know, you drive a Land Cruiser. The problem is, you know, it's old and it's been around a long time, just like the G, right? And when the new G came out, it exploded because all of a sudden it became cool and hip again.
Even in 2008, no one was driving Land Cruisers. If Justin Bieber pulls up to the Oscars Land Cruiser.
No, it's not that same thing. It's okay, the G is like, you know, if you're like cool and too hip for school, then you drive the G. But there is just as much, like, there's new money and there's old money, but there's just as much old money Like, think of the Hamptons. Now, I'm not thinking of Beverly Hills. I'm thinking of, like, the Hamptons, like, places like that, right, where there's a ton of old money. Those people are all driving Land Cruisers, and they know the value of that vehicle. And that is that's an underground kind of, like...
Sure. There's like, Land Cruiser
like
people.
Like, status and demand. And if they built a new one, I think, or if they brought a new one, I think it would have that same kind of trajectory that the G-Wagon had, where it's the most popular Mercedes, and
yeah,
you can't
buy
it right
now.
Yeah, but
the G is popular because it's a status symbol in rap videos.
But it's also... It's old school money versus new.
But even if they bring... a new Land Cruiser in, you're not. I just don't see them selling it at 90K. I mean,
I see them selling it.
If I were
Toyota, I would just blow through 100K. I would make that thing like the poster child for 120,000.
Why wouldn't you make it a Lexus then? Because Lexus is the premium brand.
Because it doesn't have the brand equity and it doesn't have the brand reputation that the Land Cruiser has.
The Land Cruiser has a ton of brand
equity. The Lexus to me says old man. The Toyota Land Cruiser says rich, serious, old money. And that's a whole different vibe that I want versus the one that I don't want.
See, in my mind, Land Cruiser, and from folks I talk to, Land Cruiser represents dependability. It represents longevity, off-road ability,
money.
Toughness, but it doesn't represent rich. There's some folks out there who are really pragmatic, and they're like, I'm going to buy the car that'll last me 300,000 miles. But if you have that kind of money, there's a good chance you're going to say, I want the Range Rover brand.
It's like the difference between Warren Buffett and Elon Musk, right?
Elon Musk is way more cool right now than Warren Buffett.
But there are people that want both. You know, there are some people that want to be like Musk, but there's a lot of people that want to be like Buffett. There is a lot of that kind of, you know, deep down, old school, you know, old respectability that people strive for and want and appreciate and has brand value. Sure, there's a flashy stuff, right? But there's
I agree. I'm all about the Land Cruiser. I love it, Dad. But I think that's a really good example. There's a lot more folks interested in Musk right now in this culture than there is Buffett. There just isn't that much interest in Warren Buffett.
Smart money is in Buffett. Whereas
the smart money is in Buffett, but the smart money isn't cool right now, and it's not drawing people to that lifestyle.
Maybe it's just a matter of, you know, our age difference. Maybe when you get to be, you know,
ultimately,
older,
Dad, but
you'll understand. You'll understand kind of.
Then why is
it
not the best-selling car since 2007 when it was debuted? It was a brand new car at one point.
I think the people who knew what it was worth and what it was bought it, and the rest of us didn't. That's why I'm saying with the right marketing campaign and the right new, you know, product, they could actually blow that thing out the door like they did with the G-Wagon. I think that it's got that same potential, and I think killing it is, like I say, you do it at your own peril. But if I were Toyota, I think you've got a diamond in the rough there that would, drive traffic to your dealerships, would elevate the brand, and would reinforce Toyota as a leader in off-roading. So if you want to kill it, go for it, guys. But once again, Tommy, it's a matter of perspective. I think, you know, what we see here in America is very different.
Oh, totally.
From what people see in Wolfsburg or what people see in Japan.
I agree, but the issue is
I'll give you another example of that.
I can't speak to what people see in Australia or Japan. I just don't know what their culture is. I'm just speaking from my perspective as an American in America.
I'll give you another example. When we were recently at Toyota, right, somebody suggested that with the new Tundra, they should brand it as a Lexus. And the CEO of the head of Lexus, and you know, the leadership team was up there. They all looked at the journalist like he was crazy. Like, nobody's going to buy a Lexus pickup. And I thought to myself, it's brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant. They all went Blackwood. Who bought a Lincoln Blackwood? And I'm like, that was absolutely the wrong way to go, right? There are a ton of Lexus buyers out there. Tons of them who also own King Ranches and who also own High Countries, right? And if they were to walk into the dealership and there would be a Lexus pickup sitting there, I bet you as many would buy them as opposed to walking across the street and going and getting yourself a King Ranch at the Ford dealer. I think they would. I just think they would because the Lexus experience in the dealership is so refined and so great that people would buy that pickup because they would know that it's got the Lexus Toyota / off-road ability, its brand value for reliability. It's got kind of that new kind of like chicness that hey, I have a Lexus pickup truck. And the people on the management team thought I was, you know, that the journalist and then I was absolutely crazy, that it makes no sense that nobody's going to buy a Lexus pickup. And I think it would sell through the roof. Of course, I don't have, you know, a couple billion dollars to bet on that. It's a whole different, you know, thing when you're just kind of hand-boning it here. But my gut tells me a Lexus pickup, if you created it based on a Tundra, it would do really well.
I don't have the next 3 hours to have that argument with you, but it is an interesting idea. And as always, guys, let us know what you think of this Rip Cars in the comment section below.
And are there any others you think are on the chopping block?
For
chop,
sure.
Chop, chop, chop.
Yeah, it's a shame.
All right. Thanks for watching. And remember, check out, of course, all of our YouTube channels, TFL Car. And thank you especially to all of our Patreon members who are helping to support this podcast. As you can tell, there are no commercials on it. It's getting harder and harder to do that because of the amount of time and effort that we're putting into these. At some point, we have to pay our rent. So we're really grateful to our Patreons for making this possible. Tommy, thank you for joining me. And guys, thank you for joining us. And we'll see you next week.
Yep. See ya.
Ciao.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.